it's hard sometimes to say no to things, just in general, and to say, yeah, I want to save some time for myself. So that's been a process of saying no to things and knowing that it's okay to say no.
Hey there, and welcome to Work is Third, the podcast that is all about indulging in rest, setting boundaries, finding joy, and putting yourself first. I'm Dawn Hunter, your host, and I'm so excited that you're here. Today, I am joined by my dear friend, Carmen Price Carrillo, for a conversation that is equal parts heartfelt, hilarious, and healing. We talk about joy, creativity, neurodivergence, friendship, and giving yourself grace. Whether you're road tripping through national parks, saying no to burnout, or building a tiny army of chip and dip bowls. Crowns were worn, joy was shared. You'll get it soon. If you want to skip around, I've added section markers in addition to the regular chapter markers, but honestly, you're going to want to stick around for the whole thing. Let's dive in. Hello, Carmen.
Hi, Dawn.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I'm really glad that you're here. I'm a little concerned that we are both like late night loopy and that this will be a lot of silliness.
It probably will be.
But it will be joyful and informative as well.
It usually is with us.
Yes. So to kick us off, okay. I'd like to ask you to describe how you're doing today in one word.
I am rejuvenated.
Rejuvenated?
Yes.
What? Ooh, tell me more. I think I know the answer to this, but I'm like, tell me more.
So I just got back from a two-week trip with one of my best friends, and I got to see a lot of friends that live in Virginia. And then most of the trip was centered on us going on a week-long journey of seeing 7 national parks, which we did in 5 days.
It's a lot.
I covered 2,500 miles driving. So it was a little insane. Slept in the car for most of it, but it was one of the best trips I've been on, and it was very much needed.
Ooh, I love that. When you say rejuvenated, what is that feeling like actually in your body?
It feels like a sense of calm. I had talked to my boss before I left, and I deleted Teams and Outlook off my phone.
So good call.
Two fully like disconnected weeks off and just being able to breathe and sit and talk and cry and laugh and not feel any kind of responsibility to anyone, and I could just go where we wanted to go, I could just be how I wanted to be, was just a feeling of calm and a feeling of much needed rest. And
I like
myself that rest.
Physical rest, mental rest?
Physical rest. Mental rest, no, because my brain is always constantly going, so that didn't shut off. Because I look at the Grand Canyon and be like, wow, I am a tiny ant in this grand world that we're in. So I don't think I gave myself as much of a mental rest, but definitely a physical rest and allowing myself to fully rest and fully be present in the trip and not feel like I had to get mad at myself and be like, oh, you took a day off and you just kind of lazed about all day and laid down and napped. And I think I felt bad about myself doing that sometimes, judging how I rest. So this felt very much like you have full blank permission to do whatever you need to do that day.
Do you think that is something you'll carry forward? Because I also, so many of us struggle, right, with feeling guilty about rest.
Yes.
So is this something where you came back and you want to keep that practice going?
Yes, I do think it's something I've talked about with my therapist of like being better to myself. And I would never, if you were like, oh, I just lazed about all day and took a nap, I wouldn't be like, wow, you suck. So I shouldn't say that to myself. If I wouldn't say it to a friend.
I'm glad that you wouldn't say that to me.
I wouldn't. But I'm trying to be better about doing that for myself. So I think that's definitely something I'm taking from it is just, it is okay to rest. It's okay to disconnect. It's okay to put your phone on do not disturb. It's okay to go in the middle of the desert with no cell service.
Well, here's what I need to know.
Yes.
Is, did your boss or whoever, your manager, know that you deleted these apps off of your phone? And did you put them back on when you came back?
So, yes, my boss did know that I deleted them.
Okay.
We had a lovely conversation before I left, and I was like, yeah, I'm not going to have cell service. And that was for one part of the trip. The other parts, I knew that I would probably have cell service because I would be in Virginia. But I was like, I'm not going to have cell service, so I'm going to just delete. I'm like, I don't really want notifications, so I'm going to delete these apps. And he was like, go for it. Do it. Do what you need to do.
I don't know
disconnect.
Your. Yeah, I love that. I don't know your boss personally, but the way that you talk about him, I'm just like, I need to meet this person. Yes,
I think you would like him. He's been such a phenomenal boss of trying to make sure that if I'm taking time off, I'm taking it off and I'm resting. If I've messaged him and been like, I have to go pick up my grandma from daycare. And he's like, go pick up that grandma. You do you. And it's always in this very like supportive voice. So he's just been super supportive and was very supportive of this trip and resting. And when my flight had problems, he was like, take your time, get home safely. It's all good. I did download the apps back today because today was my first day back at work. But I don't think I remembered my password correctly. So they're not connected the way they're supposed to be connecting. So that's a future Carmen problem.
Future Carmen can deal with that.
Yeah. Current Carmen is going through all of the emails that came while she was gone. But
notifications can come later.
Notifications can come later.
So I was really excited to send you a picture because I ended up randomly at Theodore Roosevelt National Park during the same time that you were traveling. And I just happened to be just driving around North Dakota. And saw the Painted Canyon, which to me, I think it's what it's called. I think it's like a mini Grand Canyon. Like, yeah. It's very colorful. There's a gorge. Like, it looks really cool.
Yeah.
There were bison in the parking lot.
There were bison in the parking
lot?
In
the parking lot. And this lady, I swear to God, this lady was like, you should not go up near them, though. And I was like, lady, you don't have to tell me.
We saw a bear in the parking lot, and there was this little restaurant, and then a hill. And then the parking lot, and then, like, the ranger station. And the bear is on the hill. A man is at the restaurant, just looking out on the railing, does not see this bear whatsoever, completely oblivious to it. And my friend and I stopped, and I was like, bear? And she's like, bear? And then all these people come out of their cars and start walking up to this bear to take photos of the bear. And I was like, we're supposed to go tell a ranger, right? And my friend was like, yes. And I'm like, okay, I'm about to get out of this car. And there's a bear. So I took off running. I ran into the ranger station. And I think it was like a husband and wife who were manning it that time. And I was like, there's a bear like on the hill. And she's like, ah, Bert, you want me to do it? And just grabbed an air horn. And he was like, you got it, honey. And she went out and she air horned the bear.
Does that work?
I guess so.
Did it take off?
They're like bear horn. It took off and it ambled and they were like, It's like one of 30 in Big Bend National Park.
Okay.
So it was kind of cool to see this like rare sighting, but also the sighting of tourists of like, stop going towards the bear. Go away from
away
the bear.
From the bear.
You have Zoom. We all have Zoom on our phones. You could just zoom in.
You can get a great shot.
At the bear?
Yeah.
Okay. Be away from the bear.
They probably wanted selfies with the bear.
I think they wanted selfies, but she scared it off with her bear
horn. Good for her. I am sad I didn't see anyone get run over by a bison because there were a lot of people who were. I wanted to be the one that captured it on video, like in the back of the parking lot.
You're not supposed to want anyone get run over by a bison.
This is true. I don't want harm to come to anyone. But I do want humor.
You think it would be funny.
In my life. As long as I didn't get hurt.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, though, if you get run over by a bison, I don't think you're not going to be not hurt, you know?
Fair. Fair.
I think you're going to be hurt by it. I did also think
take
of
it back.
You because I saw an honest to God tumbleweed go across the road. And I was like, this is Arizona. And it was tiny. It was like a baby tumbleweed.
You had little baby tumbleweeds. You get big ones, but a lot of little baby ones.
It was like midnight, driving on the road. My friend's asleep. And I'm like, that's a tumbleweed. And I had no one to tell about this tumbleweed as it went.
I appreciate that. A few years ago, when I went out to Santa Fe where I was doing my fellowship, I remember I got in town at like, I don't know, midnight, 1 a.m. And it was dark. There were no lights anywhere. And I remember seeing a little tumbleweed go across the road. And I was like,
I'm home.
I love that for you. I did think also while I was in New Mexico, I wonder where Dawn's mom is.
Because you went to White Sands, right?
We did go to White Sands.
Yes. Literally, my mom is, I don't know, 25 minutes from White Sands.
I would have gone and seen your mom that day.
I'm disappointed.
So hot.
There's no shade.
But so one of the other things that I really love from this trip is we went to Carlsbad Caverns at one point, and it's like 750 feet underground. It's a giant hole. Cavern. And there was a family ahead of us that had flashlights. And we didn't we had forgotten to bring flashlights. So we kind of stayed behind them for most of this so we could see what they were seeing. And at one point they're like, "Oh, you can go around us." And we're like, "We're using your flashlights." And they were like, "Okay, you're part of the family now." And we joined their family group. And they would be like, "Did Carmen and Sophia see this? Did they get a chance? Like, they just adopted us."
Aww.
And we were talking to them. And we were like, "Yeah, we're going to go to Guadalupe Mountain later today. And then White Sands tomorrow." And they're like, "We're going to White Sands." And we ended up going to the gift shop in the morning at White Sands and running into them again. And they were like, "We just came off. We could only do it for 30 minutes. Here, we bought this wax if you want this free wax for your boards." And we're like, "Okay, thank you." And we're like, we'll stay out longer. Like, no, it was so hot. Then you have to climb all the way back up the hill. And we're like, "We understand why they could only stay for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
We made it to like 45 minutes.
It's rough in the summer.
But still, I 100% recommend anyone who wants to do a road trip like that to just say yes and do it.
I also feel rejuvenated by my trip, so yeah. I'm glad that was your word.
Yeah.
Because I came back also feeling like I want to make sure that I don't forget how peaceful I feel right now. And that I want to go back into my daily life and not rush into it.
Yeah.
And just say, this past week has been amazing.
Yeah.
It's been restful. It's been quiet.
It's been quiet. It's been calm.
Yeah.
And it's, this keeps falling off, but it's okay.
The crown looks amazing, though.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're wearing.
For people who are only listening to the audio,
they're not going to see the crowns.
You won't see the crowns, but we are wearing crowns.
That's very good.
They're amazing.
They also make you feel rejuvenated and happy.
Yes.
Your life. So we highly suggest getting a crown and wearing it whenever you want to.
So we like joyful things, you and I.
Joyful things.
And these crowns, this one is not mine. Thank you for letting me wear one.
You're welcome.
Is from the one you are wearing is from the Renaissance Festival.
Yes. Oh my God, this crown. It does match my necklace. I have a Heart of the Ocean necklace from the Titanic movie. And the reason I have it is because I wanted it as a kid when we went to the Titanic Museum. And my mom had this whole lecture about the value of money and how it was just this trinket and I wouldn't wear it enough. And my grandfather listened to all of this and then went and bought it as she was talking. And then as soon as she finished, was like, "I bought it for her." And my mom was like, "That was not the point I was trying to make." And I decided to continue that kind of spirit of spite that he had. And I wear it to every fancy event with my mother.
Yeah.
So when I saw this crown, I was like, it matches my Heart of the Ocean necklace. And I can spite my mother with even more and wear both whenever I want to.
I love that.
Some little joys.
Yes.
Thanks.
So let's talk about some other things that bring us joy, because we actually connected over joyful things.
We did.
Not all of them joyful, actually. Let me take that back.
Not all of them joyful.
We connected at work.
We found the joy where we were, even in a joyless place.
That's a great way to phrase it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, we found a way to survive.
I was thinking about that song lyric where it's like, we found love in a hopeless place, which is also kind of what we did, because I do love you.
I do love you, too. So we found love and joy in a loveless and joyless place.
Yeah. I still remember, I think it was aerial yoga, and you and our friend Julie and I were all talking one day, and I'm pretty sure, I'm guessing that it was you that was like, "I really want to do aerial yoga." And I was like, "Okay, Dawn, like, I have also thought about that at one point." And I think either you or Julie was the first to be like, "Well, I guess we're all going to go together and do this."
I remember finding a Groupon.
Oh.
Is Groupon even still a thing?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so.
I do remember finding a Groupon, and I was like, "We can all go together."
Yeah. See, I knew it was you. I was like, it probably was not me. It was one of the two of you being like, "Yes, we should totally do this." But just being like, "Okay, let's go try something together." We all wanted to do this. We didn't have, like, the people necessarily who were like, yes, I'll go to aerial yoga on a Groupon with you.
Right.
The studio in the middle of
nowhere. Of nowhere. Yeah. Like, sadly, it closed.
I did not know.
Yeah, so it is not open anymore. Although there are still lots of acro. Well, we talked about aerial, but there are still like other groups, places you can do aerial and acro.
Yeah.
In town.
Which we've also tried.
We did also try.
We've tried a lot of things.
So this was actually fun because I was at a conference recently and we were talking about ways to explore, get outside yourself, try new things. And I told them about our Try It Tuesday crew.
Our tit crew. Yeah.
And I said, you know, this was a group of women who we just wanted to try new things with people who were willing to go explore and make new friends.
Yeah.
And so we started with aerial yoga. We did also try acro yoga.
Yep.
We did belly dancing.
We did a mural tour on bikes.
Yes. We did the...
Glass making.
We did pickleball.
We did pickleball.
And I was thinking some of these were early in the pandemic. So I remember doing pickleball and we were all wearing masks.
Yep.
Yeah. Because this was still, I think, pre-vaccine.
Yep.
And we were just like, we need to get out of our house.
But we also need to be safe.
But that was fun. We did cross stitch. And this was also pandemic.
Yep.
We sat outside
at Julie's house and did a cross
stitch.
It did not go well for some of them.
Yeah.
I think Julie struggled with it a little bit.
Yes.
And was like, we'll get this one day. But we've done a couple of craft nights.
We have
done. Somebody's house.
We did tiny painting at Julie's house too.
We did tiny paintings.
We dyed our hair. Yeah.
And then washed it off with a garden hose.
We did.
Which was an efficient way to get the hair dye out.
Also refreshing because it was summertime, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've done a lot with that group.
We have done a lot. And I think part of me is a little sad because we were naturally more consistent with it early in COVID and even I don't want to say post-COVID, but 21, 22. Mm-hmm. After we were able to hang out freely again.
Yeah.
With less concern for dying. Although I guess we still have concerns, acro yoga, I guess, could be dangerous.
That is accurate.
But, we still had I think an incentive to get together. People were still trying to figure out what does hanging out look like now that we can be around each other safely. And now we're just almost like we're back to normal, absent everything that's going on in the world today.
Yeah. And it's hard, I think, again, we talked about earlier, to make that time for those things. And
right.
It's okay to give myself a night with friends.
Yeah.
Be able to just relax. I don't have to make it a productive day after having a whole day at work. I can just go, and have a calm night, have a quiet night. Maybe not playing Terraforming Mars until 4 a.m. Because that was a struggle. That one was a struggle for me, to be honest.
I am curious to hear more of your thoughts. So, for listeners, I love, and some of our mutual friends love, nerdy strategy board games. Mm-hmm. And one of those games is Terraforming Mars. We routinely don't start this game before 9 p.m. And inevitably,
it's 10 or 11, babe.
Yeah. And then it'll be 3 or 4 in the morning before we're finished. It's a long game.
It's a long, involved game. And I think it is partially because we have to leave room for some people's ADHD battling some other people's ADHD.
Because some people, everyone in that room me. And who's to say I don't have ADHD? Possibly. But all of us, everyone in the crew.
Just all fighting each other. One's trying to explain the instructions. One's not paying attention to the instructions whatsoever. And then asking 17 questions. That's me.
And in the meantime, I'm here and I'm like, it's very clear to me. Can we just get started?
Todd's like, I just want to move and just go.
Is it my turn yet?
Is it my turn?
Am I winning?
I love you, but your husband will go... Okay, my turn. And he'll either have a full-blown strategy to mess everybody up, or he will have no strategy at all. Just vibes. But it still takes 5-10 minutes.
You could go walk around the block.
You could take a lap.
You could get a lap or two in while he's doing his turns.
And Terraforming Mars, with all the resources, was just...
It is not a game that is for everyone.
No.
But you tried it.
I tried it.
And you also tried Lords of Waterdeep, which was good at.
Very fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that one.
We've also tried D&D.
We did. We've done it twice now.
Twice now. Yeah.
We've played twins.
We're twins.
Obviously, we look, if you're seeing us on video, we look very alike.
We're so similar.
You know, you can barely tell us apart.
If I was wearing the same crown right now?
No difference.
Confusion.
Total confusion.
Which is also our D&D campaigns, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
Total confusion.
That's a really good phrase for them. They're just utter confusion. One of our friends ran our first one-shot for us so we could get a taste of what D&D was. And I think I stressed him out quite a bit.
Because yeah, I do recall that.
I think he gave me his phone number unwillingly so I could text him questions that I had that I didn't want the group to know. And at one point, I got frustrated with Mike and asked the team if I could kill everyone at the like if I could poison everyone at the beginning of this game and save them at the end if I like them. And he was like, no, please don't do that. And then I wanted to have a hug slug, which I had found randomly online. He was like, I have no idea what this is, what it does. And I was like, it's just a hug slug. I want it to hug people. But I put myself into things. If I'm going to try it, I'm going to try it well.
That is true. I appreciate that, actually, because I can't think of any of the things we've mentioned that we tried.
Yeah.
That we all didn't give 100% to.
Yeah.
Like, we tried to get up those aerial silks.
We tried. Clarification. Some of us made it up the silks on her first time and had almost zero problems with it, while the rest of us were going, and struggling quite frequently to get an inch off the ground. Some of us.
But I felt your pain.
Have been easier than others.
Yeah.
Because some of us don't have core strength.
It does require some core strength. Yeah. No, but I mean, I remember doing it and just like everyone, even though it wasn't easy for all of us, that we tried. Like, we just tried to do it.
Yeah.
We stayed there and we kept trying to get up that silk and supported each other.
That's what you have to do in life.
But it is so true.
Just keep going.
Like, you keep going. You support each other. You have people around you who are like, you could do it.
Someone standing under you going, it's okay if you fall, I will catch you. And you being like, yeah, you could catch me.
If you fall, I will catch you. I'll be waiting.
And then they just sing to you and you feel better about
yourself. Life is good.
Life is great.
So lately, we haven't really been doing Try It Tuesday because we have a Thursday night date. We, on Thursdays, yes, have been going to pottery.
Which has been so lovely.
I look forward to pottery so much. Right?
Much. I think because you guys had messaged me and you'd been doing it, you and Cassidy had been doing it for a couple months. And I was like, okay, you know, I wanted to try pottery. I wanted to get back to Try It Tuesday. It's okay that it's a Thursday. Try It Tuesday can be any day you want. It can be a Sunday.
Any day.
Whatever day works for you. But it was okay that it was a Thursday. It was okay that I was like, I have no pottery experience whatsoever. I don't know how this is going to go. And I think for myself, I struggle sometimes with trying something and not being immediately good at it and thinking, okay, well, if I'm going to go pay for this craft and I can't make anything, I'm going to struggle with it. But there are stencils.
There are molds.
There are molds. There are cookie cutters that you can buy while Joann's was closing for $1.
Yes.
So you have weird cookie cutters and random shapes. And you can just make kind of
anything you want.
Anything you want. And you can change it. And you can get things that look like temporary tattoos if you can't draw.
Stick them on your pottery.
Stick them on your pottery. No one will know. It's very cute. It's been one of the best things recently.
I love it because I'm a very logical, linear person. But it comes out in my crafting because I'm very precise. Yeah. Like, I measure lines. I need, what are the instructions? And I still make beautiful, creative things.
You do.
But it's not organic for me like it is for other people.
Yeah.
But I really love this pottery class because it really forces me to just think differently. Because I just get this, you get a slab of clay and you're like, what do I make?
Make something.
I have to make something out of this.
Yeah.
And then it just opens up your mind to, like, all the options of things that you can create.
Yeah. I think it also, for me, it's been just kind of following the vibe where I go and saying, okay, I think one day I had an idea and I was trying to make it work and it didn't work, but it kind of looked like an egg. And I was like, there's nothing stopping me from making an egg. Why? I don't know. And then I made like three of them. I was making them so much that a woman asked me and was like, oh, I wanted to know what's the whole thing with the eggs. And all I could think in my head was just to answer her was egg. I didn't have a reason. I didn't have a rhyme. It was just fun to make and fun, like an easy thing to make and be like, I did that. And now I can put one on my ceiling. So it looks like I threw an egg up onto my ceiling. And now there's a purpose to it.
You put them on your ceiling?
I'm going to.
Oh,
I'm
my
trying
goodness.
To get the like really strong command strips so that it doesn't come crashing down on my head.
Oh, command strips. Is that the best option?
I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, I feel like clay is going to be, I mean, a little heavy for a command strip, right?
Yeah. I have the Dollar Tree version right now, and that's going to come crashing on me.
Yeah.
Head.
Yeah.
So I got to get the like.
You get the real deal.
You know, invest a little bit more.
Okay.
Get the really sturdy strips.
That'll be really cute, though.
Yeah. Because I did tell my mom the other day I felt like most people's ceilings were boring, and I think it stressed her out where she was like, are you going to decorate your ceiling? And I was like, yeah.
I think that's a great idea. Actually, the one of the places that my hairstylist used to work, they had their ceiling done. So when you were laying back getting your hair washed, there's clouds and butterflies and stuff.
I mean, I think if you talk about like ceiling decorations, most people may think of like those glow-in-the-dark stars that you put on like a kid's bedroom.
Yeah.
And I was kind of thinking that brought me joy as a kid to have these like random glow-in-the-dark stars. Why can't I have that as an adult?
Right.
And I have pretty things to look up when I'm laying on my couch or laying on my bed.
Right.
It's just this like blank white canvas.
I love that though, because I think that is really aligned with the idea behind this show, which is that I think that we get into these ruts where we have a way that we should behave or things we should do, or we have an expectation for what joy or happiness or rest should look like. And if you, doesn't matter what age you are, if you want to put glow-in-the-dark stars on your ceiling, put them on your ceiling.
Do it. I think I've been feeling that a lot with, like, my house of people saying, oh, well, if you do this, it'll decrease the resale value. If you change this, then the person down the road. And I don't want to live in a house for other people. I want to live in a house that's for me. I want to be able to, if I find a dragon skull on Facebook Marketplace and I convince the person to give it to me for $5, it's going to go right next to my fantasy bookshelf that I got for free from a man in an alleyway. You know, it's just I'm trying to find that joy that I thought I would find in cartoons when they were like, adults can do whatever they want. You have to be responsible and go to work and earn the money to do those things. But saying it's okay to do that, it's okay to find that joy in something else that's not been told. Society says you can find joy in work and you can find joy in family and you can find it here. But no one talks about, you know, you can grow up and have pottery dreams and not have, you know, your own pottery studio. You don't have to make a business out of it. You can just be like, I want to make an army of tiny vases.
Yeah.
For no other reason than I just want an army of tiny vases.
Or an army of chip and dip bowls.
We're an army of chip and dip bowls.
Which is what I have going on.
You have so many chip and dip bowls. I mean, they're beautiful every time, though. I do not understand how you, like, they stay together, because mine don't.
That makes me feel good, because I will look at videos on, like, Insta or something, and I see them doing the slip and adding strips, and I'm like, I don't do all that.
Yeah.
So I don't know how my stuff stays together, honestly.
Cassidy added me to a Facebook page called Hand-Built Bitches.
Hand-Built
Bitches?
Bitches?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's great. But it also makes you feel, like, super bad sometimes where you're like, these people are doing these amazing creations and they're doing all of this stuff. And how is that? How did you do that? How does it look like you're painting with clay? And I don't think I'm going to get to that level. But I think it's also this pottery class has been really good for me of like there's no timeline for it. There's no grading. There's no rubric. There's no someone telling me what I have to do. I can get to wherever I want to be in whatever time I want to get there. I had this idea before I did the pottery class of I've always loved blue and white pottery, that style and just the look of it. And I was like, I can't draw. So I don't know how that's ever going to, like, happen. And I found the underglaze transfers that my teacher told me about. And I was like, I can make that dream happen. I can make as much
blue and white pottery as I want to, and I can still say I made that. And and that's where I'm finding those like small moments of joy of like that may not be for someone else a check on the checklist. That may be for someone else, oh, you're using something to make it. It's not fully handmade. But for me, I'm happy with it. And yeah. I'm finding that happiness in it.
I'm looking at you for ideas. Your little the earrings and things that you've been making with the underglaze transfers. They're so cute.
I'm looking to you for ideas. You made an entire castle with like moss on the side, your own little like emblem in the middle, your own flag on it that somehow stayed connected as well. Still don't know.
I actually don't know how that stayed on.
I'm really proud of that flag, to be honest with you. I know it's not my flag, but like I was like, girl, props.
That was my favorite part. It was like, it's not a castle if it doesn't have the flag. That was a lot of fun to make because that was completely freehand and I didn't use...
You didn't use templates?
I didn't use a template or anything. Plans. Yeah.
You used just your brain.
I was just like, I think a castle looks like this. Fortunately, it sort of looks like a little fort.
It's not sort of. It looks like a little fort castle.
Yeah, it's cute.
It looks like the like little entrance. There's like a big old castle in the distance that's doing its own thing. And yours is like, I am the entrance so that you are like awed by my splendor.
Yes.
And you get a little taste before you see the big full castle.
The big full castle. I don't know if I'll make a big full castle, but I am saving lots of videos. And my goal right now, the joy for me is I'm just going to try these things. And I don't care how it turns out.
I also find with pottery, especially if I make something and I don't love it, I can gift it to like my grandma. And be like, here you go, voila. I made you this flower. And she's like, wow. And it like kind of looks like a flower, but not really. But because you made it, someone's going to be like, wow, I love this because you made it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be fully good.
They're going
to
love it.
They're going to love it.
Yes.
It's a joy of pottery.
Yes. Pottery is joyful.
It is.
We talked about a lot of joyful things.
Yes.
And I'm curious, have you always... been like had this approach to joy, or is this something that you've developed over time? And I say, like, understanding we're all on our own journey still, right? We're always learning, but do you feel like even growing up, what was joy like for you?
I think as a kid, I would find joy in small things, and I would find things that I liked, little trinkets and little just tiny versions of things I've always liked. And I've always known like that brings me joy, and going to a thrift shop and trying to find these pieces or find a book that I want. I've always been a person to try to find those small joys. But I think I did hit a part in my life and in like my mental health journey where I wasn't giving joy to myself, and I wasn't, I was judging what I found joy in and that it wasn't matching up with someone else's definition. I think sometimes I love reading. It's one of my favorite things. I have an entire book spreadsheet and it's a little insane and makes people think I'm crazy. But
I think it's impressive.
I love it.
Just side note.
It's a way that I found to, I used to love reading as a kid. Then I got into school and it's like, no, you have to do homework. You can't read for fun. Or, oh, you're reading, but you're not doing this. You could be doing homework. You could be playing a sport. Why are you doing this hobby? And then you get into the adult world and it's like, no, read books on business. Read books on climbing the corporate ladder. Read books on this. And you're like, but I also want to read a fantasy romance novel that I can just escape into and have a moment with and just find joy in it and not have to read for something, just read for the sheer enjoyment of it. So I think that's kind of mirrored my joy journey in a lot of ways, is you have that joy as a kid. And then as you get older, it's kind of, you got to tamp it down. You got to focus on the real world and not focus on just your fun, your little hobbies, your, you know, that thing that you do. And it makes you feel kind of, am I doing something wrong by finding joy? Am I doing something wrong by reading a book and staying up all night and reading it, even though I have work the next morning?
But isn't that fun? Like when we were kids, it was like staying up and you had your, I had a flashlight, you know, reading my book. Now I have a Kindle, so I just, it's probably still bad for my eyes, but staying up, reading a good book, finishing it in the middle of the night. I mean, not every night, but it is fun to do that.
And it's also, I think, finding those common people. I remember, I love the Percy Jackson series as a kid. I love the Percy Jackson series as an adult. They have all the new books that are coming out, which I'm so excited about. And I remember it came out on a Tuesday, and I usually go into the office Tuesday, Wednesday. And I was like, what am I want to like get this book and read it in a day. I haven't been this excited about a book in a while, and I want to spend all day reading it. And there's one day where I was talking about this to my boss just randomly. And I was like, yeah, you know, the next one's coming out. Like, I think another book I wanted to read was coming out in September or something. And he was like, you know, you have life days that you could just, you could take a day off. And I was like, I could take a reading day.
You guys have life days?
So we have 4 life days, which are, I don't remember what the acronym stands for, but it's basically like 4 days you can take off during the year to do something that like brings you joy.
And I could, like, love that.
Take it in addition to PTO or take it in addition to something else, but it's just kind of a day for you.
Hello, employers.
Like, it's very lovely. It's
yes.
A lovely benefit to have. He was like, if you want one of your days to be like you just reading your book all day, go do it. And so to find those people that you're like, this person also gets it. And this person is encouraging you to find that joy. Because also as a boss, you're thinking about it of, do I want someone who is trying to fit this in around work and stressing and then having a little bit of joy and then coming back to work? Or do I want them to have a day to just do something that they enjoy, have a mental break, have a little like rest, and then come back to work and be like, I did that. I'm so excited I did that. And now I can be here and focus.
Right. You're more present. You're a better person and employee because you got that rest.
Right.
And you did something for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah. I also love a shadow daddy break.
You love a what?
The shadow daddies from all the like. That's what they're called. Why are you laughing?
Because I've never heard you say this term.
But you know the term.
No, I don't.
Is this like a my age term thing?
It's probably.
Oh, no. Okay. So the shadow daddies are all these guys who are like in the Sarah J. Maas world or like Fourth Wing, where they can literally like wield shadows and they're dark and twisty, but they're like morally gray, but in my opinion, aren't really gray. They're obviously the good guys. They wield shadows. They're shadow daddies. Listen, Lindsay, who has been on the podcast, actually talked about their book club is called Shadow Daddy Issues.
You've never used that term.
I mean, I'm sorry that I haven't used it sooner on you because, first of all, it's a great term. And now, when you're scrolling through romanticy TikTok or whatever, now you will see Shadow Daddy and you will know what it's about. You're welcome.
I don't think they ever write Shadow Daddy in the book.
So they don't. This is the popular terminology for them.
Is it the popular terminology?
I mean, probably for women my age.
This is also, I think, a point of finding joy that I didn't really understand totally also when I was younger that I would have later in my life is I do remember as a kid struggling with some friendships and trying to like maintain like healthy boundaries with friends and my mom saying, you don't need a lot of friends, you just need a few good ones. And for years I did not listen to this advice and I was like, I don't know what this woman is talking about. And then I went to college and I made that group of like good friends and I moved and I was like, I'm kind of struggling because I don't have that. And coming to where we used to work together and finding you and Julie and being like, oh, you can find friends who are generationally different than you are. And I think that's been a big point of our friendship with this group is that I like to say is you guys give me the advice you wish you had in your 20s and I bring you vitality.
Fair, though. This is true.
I mean, it's a good exchange, but that has also been a part of our friendship is sometimes realizing those generational differences.
I mean,
it's like, well, I know what a morally gray character is. And you're like, shattered at me.
This is why I'm sad because I'm like, wow, is this really just like my generation that reads these books calls them that? This is not what everyone calls them?
It could be, but you also are the one who's gotten me more into like fantasy romance books, I think, and romance books in general. I didn't read a lot before I met you.
Oh, that's right.
So I'm still getting, you know, used to some of the lingo and how things work. I mean, you've kind of ruined some of my to-be-read lists where I'm like, okay, you're going to ignore that and go read a stupid scientist romance. But, you know,
It enriches you in some way.
It enriches you in some way.
Yeah. I actually remember many years ago reading something that was like life advice, and it was have a friend from every generation.
Yeah, I like that.
And I love that because we do, I think that is our friend group.
Yeah.
And we all have similar interests and vibes, but we all bring something different to it because of, you know, what era we grew up in or, you know, yeah. just where we're at in our life.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful and lovely because we all still identify with each other and support each other.
Yeah. And it feels very much like it just felt kind of like puzzle pieces that fit. And it didn't feel like, oh, I mean, there have been times when you have been, you know, ageist against me and what I know. What movies I've seen, what references I get.
I'm not being ageist. I'm not even being judgy. I mean, maybe a little.
You're judgy in like a healthy way.
Healthy judgy. I'm curious.
Like, you need to please go watch this movie.
Please go watch these great 80s movies.
I have seen some of them.
So that we can have, you know, make jokes about them.
Some conversations.
Yeah. And we can make references and you will get them.
I still get really excited when I get a reference and then I want you to know that I got the reference. And then I want to doubly make sure that you know, especially like in pottery when our teacher plays, you know, hits of the 80s the entire time.
All the time.
I'm like, Dawn, I know this song. People are like, okay. I mean, it's like, it's a common song. It's still pretty popular. And I'm like, but I know it.
But you know it.
And Dawn knows that I know. So we're good.
So I've been singing the Mentos commercial. Because when we're in pottery, whatever station that we're listening to,
yeah.
it always comes on.
Always comes on.
Mentos fresh and full of life. Mentos, the fresh maker.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. I'm 99.9% sure that Brittany Murphy sang that little bit of the commercial okay. in Clueless.
I think so. I know that movie.
You do know that movie?
I do know that.
Oh, I was like, please say you do know.
I do know.
Okay, good.
Yes.
So I'm pretty sure she sings it in there, but I remember saying this in class, and there were several people who were like, what is Clueless?
Not me.
It was not you. But I was very just blown away.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
I think there are those movies sometimes that you, or those like parts of your childhood that you hold on to and you think so highly of, and then other people are like, no idea what you're talking about.
True.
That's the amount true. Of times I've talked to like book girlies who don't know like the Percy Jackson and did not have that formative experience. And I always feel bad where I'm like, you didn't have this in your childhood. You didn't read this entire book and then years later get diagnosed with ADHD and realize why you liked this book series so much and why you related to these characters so hard. You didn't have that experience. And they're like, no. And the internet's like, we got you, babe. You know,
you're not alone.
There are fandoms. They're all across the world, and you're not alone.
Well, you know, I have not read the Percy Jackson series, but of course, I grew up with, and that's weird to say this, I grew up with the Harry Potter series, but yeah. It's probably not accurate to say I grew up with that because I was in my 20s.
Yeah, but you still, like, I think we're all still growing up. I mean, I feel I'm in my 20s, and I still feel like
true.
I'm
that's fair.
Growing up, and
yeah.
there are people I've met in later generations where I'm like, you need to grow up.
Yeah, this is true. So I did grow up with him. It was an important part of my journey.
Right.
Was when the Harry Potter books originally came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was, I think it was interesting to me too, because my brother and my mom read the Harry Potter series together and that was kind of their thing together. And I had my Percy Jackson and I didn't want to like share it with anyone. So it's always been interesting to me when people like compare the two series and the differences, and you have these trios going on this adventure, this magical adventure, and it felt very similar, but also I think shaped both of us differently in those moments of finding that connection to the book and finding it with someone or finding it with yourself or finding later where your coworker is like, oh, hey, casually mentions that they're reading the Percy Jackson series and then you freak them out because you're like, oh my God, how do you feel? And then you keep asking them questions they go through, but they still talk to you about it.
Yeah.
It's good.
So I will put that on my TBR list.
Yes.
I do have a long list now.
I think that's also part of the growing up and maturing journey is realizing that my to-be-read will probably never be finished in my lifetime. And I love that because I feel like you can't ever have too many books or too much knowledge to want to have.
As long as there are books to put on the list, life is good. I would be worried if we got to a point where we're like, we have nothing.
Yeah. I feel like I would feel less satisfied if I like checked off every to be read on my Libby list.
Right.
And then there was nothing else. I would feel very sad.
Yeah. I was like, are you tearing up?
No, but I think, you know, as a kid, you can read whatever you want. You can read as much as you want. And my parents at one point, I think we had like a reading amount we were supposed to do each day. And I would sometimes just blow by it and not think of nothing else was going on. People could be moving all around me and I would just be stuck in a book. And so to be able to have that still, that same feeling still as an adult and know I have the money and the finances to get whatever books I want or to be able to make book clubs or text friends and be like, Haley, I really need to talk to someone about this book and no one else has read this. So I need you to listen to me while I talk about this book. And they're like, yeah, I'm here for that.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have to read it. It doesn't have to be their genre, but they're just there to support you is all just a part of joy.
It is joy. I mean, you're the reason that I make time, because you read at least 30 minutes a day.
I try to read, right now I'm trying to read at least 15. I was trying to read 30 minutes every day. And then I also realized there were times where I was like staying up late, trying to make that goal and trying to hit it. And some days just not feeling up for it. So I'm like, I'm trying to just read 15 minutes. That's my goal. And I started it back in the pandemic when we had gone remote. They had asked us to each pick a goal before we went remote and we were matched up with someone to kind of support that goal. So mine was to read each day and my partner's was to read books about a certain person that they wanted to learn more about this person's life. So they were going to read biographies. I stuck to my goal. They did not. But since then, I think I'm up to 620 books that I've read.
Wow.
Which just feels like nice to go back and look and be able to say, I did that. And again, the spreadsheet has made me feel good for myself to know that and to be able to say that. But I don't have to like go and show it to anyone else or say that to anyone else. And I don't ever want to say it to like enter into a competition with someone about like, I've read more than
how many books did you read?
Like, yeah. And because I think sometimes if you say you've read a lot, people are like, oh, I only read 5 books this year or 10 books, but that's 5 or 10 more than you did before.
Right.
So for me, it's nice to be able to like go back and remember that and remember which ones I read and remember when I read them and kind of where I was in life when I read them. But it just gives me that like perspective back on them that makes me feel good about it and not have to like compare or submit a progress report. Though I do still wish businesses gave us free stuff as adults for reading books like they did when we were kids.
Yeah, me too.
Like I wish I could be like, look, I got this good performance review. Can I have a free pizza?
Yeah.
But they don't do that.
Or a free something, technology.
A free technology.
A free technology.
Free book. Free shopping.
Something.
To be like, you did good.
Incentivizing things that ultimately enrich us as individuals and also enrich the world is what every company should invest in.
I would agree.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Okay. So you talked a couple of times now about having ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't know this until after you already got your first kind of big job. So what has that journey been like for you?
It's been an interesting journey. I remember like looking back at my childhood, there were some things that I can see in myself now that those were parts of having ADHD or were things that I look back at and be like, oh, I didn't know I was doing that to make myself, you know, to be able to self-soothe or to try to figure out how my brain was working. And it wasn't until I think 3.5 years ago is when I got diagnosed officially. And the woman was like, yeah, you've got it, babe. And I had started figuring it out because my cousin had it. And I talked to her and she was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's along this line of our family. She had it. Other people had it. So it was very kind of interesting to finally be told you have something. I do remember calling a friend and telling them, and I started laughing and then crying. And she's a very lovely friend, trying to be super supportive, but also like, I don't know what to do right now. Like, are you happy or are you sad? And I was like, I feel kind of both because I felt sad that I have something and my brain works differently and it's going to be harder and it's going to be not as understood sometimes and I'm not going to have the words for things. But also that relief of just there's a word for it. There's something going on and I can try to frame my brain in that space versus framing it in a neurotypical space. But it was hard kind of going on that journey, had disclosed it at work. And I think that that led to me leaving that job and feeling that struggle of, should I talk about it at work? Should I keep it to myself? Is it going to cause me problems if I talk about it? And in my current position, I think the second day I was there, someone came over and was talking to me and was like, oh, I have ADHD, and was talking about it so openly. And I remember crying to my mom of like, I think I'm going to be okay here. And now I'm pretty sure like over half my team is neurodivergent. And it has been so lovely to be, to know that I'm in a team of like-minded individuals and to have that support and to be able to say, I have this fear, and someone else say, I feel that too.
Yeah.
Be able to talk about it or to be like, yeah, if I'm working on this project, I really need to be at home in a quiet space and not in the office. And it's like, cool. That's okay. To be able to, you know, have better conversations with my boss and say, there's one project we were working on. And I was like, cool. It would be really helpful for me if you made up fake deadlines. And he was like, what? And I was like, this project has no current deadlines. And I feel kind of adrift not having that. But if I make up the deadlines, I will know that they're not real. And it will, like, I was trying to figure out like how to structure this project. Yeah. And I was like, so if you help me make up some deadlines, then I can structure the flow differently and I know how to get there. And it was, he was like, okay, we'll do that. And so having the right words for things, or being able to say, this works for me, this doesn't, has been kind of healing in the past year, I would say. But still, it's going to be, you know, a process of figuring that out in day-to-day life and in work life, especially.
Well, and the beautiful thing about you knowing this early in your career is that you can then go to future positions, because frankly, you'll probably have several more in your lifetime, that you can go and saying, I know what I need to be my best self at work, and look for those things in a future workplace.
Because I remember struggling when I had first told my first boss about it, that they were like, oh, well, we have this form for accommodations. You know, you can get a doctor to fill it out and tell us what accommodations you need and this or that. And I was like, I have no idea what I need. I don't know what works. I just figured this out, and feeling kind of adrift, because it was like I didn't have anyone else who knew or could say this accommodation worked for me. I didn't love being in a cubicle, but I realize now in my current job, I'm also in a cubicle, but I'm in a cubicle that's a little back. It's not on a main thoroughfare through the office, so people aren't always walking by my desk like they were before at this place. So it's, I found I do like where I am now, but I know why I like it. I know what I can do to make my desk feel better to myself. I have a bunch of fake plants so that I see greenery, and I don't have to keep any of them alive because I'm only there 2 days a week. They're all fake and they're always green and happy to see me. But it brings me that joy to my desk that I needed to be able to like refocus myself, or to be able to structure it in the ways that work for me, and being able to have the space to figure that out. I think in work life, I feel lucky when I got diagnosed and knowing that at the start, but also struggling where it's like, you know, I lived like 26 years not knowing. Would have been helpful to know that when I had homework or was in college alone for the first time and trying to figure that out. So it's that hard struggle of like when you get diagnosed, especially for women, that we are historically underdiagnosed with ADHD because we don't generally present in the same ways. People have this idea of it, of like the kid bouncing off the walls. And it's also the young woman sitting there and being like, I don't know what's going on, but I have to just like pretend like I do and like get through it. I got good grades. So they were like, you can't have this because you sit still, you can do this. And me being like, oh, okay, I'm struggling every day with that though.
Right. Just because you succeed doesn't mean it isn't a struggle for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important.
Yeah. And I think that's been something I've been trying to find with work too, is like, what does success look like for me? Because a project could take me longer, or could take, you know, I could go down a process with it and maybe that wouldn't be successful to some, but to others it is. And I have that space to learn and to grow with it and to have the information I need to grow as, you know, a career person, as a person, and professionally develop myself, but I'm in a supportive space for that. So I'm still using that part of my brain that's like, we need to focus on different projects. We need to get dopamine wherever we can, but in a space that's like, cool, apply it here. Go longer with it. Go further with it than what I was having before, which is also just so affirming to yourself.
Yeah. Every time you talk about your current work situation, I just feel so happy that you landed somewhere where you can be your best self, but also speak openly about who you are, like be yourself at work.
Yeah.
Be authentic. Be with people who are like you. I mean, it's just so great. And I hope everyone gets a chance to have that kind of work environment.
Yeah. I think there's a big thing in the neurodivergent community about masking. And it's kind of like you feel like you have to put on this mask when you're out in society. And I felt like that for so many years without, again, having the words for it and thinking, okay, this is how I have to present myself or this is how I have to show up in this moment. And it was so much extra mental effort and so much extra mental energy to keep that up. You know, when I got my first position, I started as an intern and then I went full time. And I got so stressed out with that of like, I have to prove why I'm here. I have to like look like I know what I'm doing. And I remember having a conversation with one of my bosses at one point and saying, I don't think you realize like how much stuff I Google. And I felt like I could be honest with her. And she was like, I know, but you know how to Google. And that is a strength in and of itself, is how to Google something, how to know what the right words are, and how to like apply it quickly. That's a strength. I don't want you to think that that's a weakness. And it kind of shifted my perspective where it was like, it's okay to say, I need help, or I don't think that I'm doing this the right way. And I would have future bosses after that that wouldn't give me that same support. And I didn't feel safe failing. I didn't feel safe admitting if I didn't know something. And so going into this position and this job that I have now of trying to say, I'm going to lead with that first. I'm going to say when I don't know something, I'm going to ask for help. And my boss now has never seen it. Really, any of the bosses there that I've had have never seen it as this person doesn't know what they're doing. You know, I've got to lead them to something. It's like, cool. Let's figure it out together. Let's help each other. I remember the first interview I had with the people who had become my boss and my supervisor. One of them kept asking me all of these technical questions. And I got in my head and I was like, I'm not going to get this job. I don't have the skills. But they would say, do you know SQL? And I was like, well, I don't, but I'm currently taking this class to try to get better at. And the guy who became my supervisor was like, we're learning too. We have this whole teacher and they're teaching us. And he was just so excited about professional development and learning for himself too, that it was like, oh, this is a safe space to do that, to learn, to try, to be able to breathe. Even for people who aren't neurodivergent, it's still that safe space to say, you can show up as yourself. You can say what you don't know. You can lean on each other. You can use each other. And that's been, I think, one of the reasons our team has been like so strong and has not had like a high turnover rate is that. Just being able to work together in a safe space.
So many things that it sounds like are good tips for other leaders in terms of creating that safe space of being in it and with your employees. So also valuing professional development and supporting your employees' development. Also admitting that you don't know everything. So many things that your folks are doing that sounds like these are great tips for people who are in managing teams.
I remember there's one piece of helpful advice I got from a consultant that we had worked with together at our old position. A lot of the other stuff she said was not great and not helpful. And I do remember running it past like you and my mom and being like, is this accurate? Should I follow this? And being like, no, that's not good advice. But I do remember the one piece she gave me was you should continue to grow. And she kind of had the career ladder mindset. And she was like, you don't want to get to be a boss and then think about what kind of boss you want to be. You should think about that now. And you should think about what kind of manager you want to be. And she was like, when you have bosses and managers, you should write down the things you liked that they did and the things you didn't like that they did. And that way you kind of have this list when you become in a position of leadership to say, I wanted to do that. I really didn't feel supported when they did that. And you can kind of go back and look at some of those, because I think it may be sometimes hard as a leader to say, I don't know something, or to admit to someone who's a different generation than you that you are struggling with something or you don't know how to do something right away. But when my bosses have done that, I'm like, oh, you're human too, and it's okay. And my bosses almost every time have been like, here's what I did to learn that so that I can copy that and I can learn it too.
I'm happy that you have that situation.
Yeah. It's better.
So we have talked about a lot of joyful things.
Yeah.
And we have also talked about a really great work situation.
Yeah.
So we have crowns on.
We do.
And so how I'd like to end this conversation is, well, we're queens always, but if we were queen for a day, what would you want to change or create in the world that would make it a more joyful place for everyone?
There's a lot that I would like to change about the current state we're living in.
Yeah. Okay, fair. Yes.
Times we're living in.
Hard to narrow it down.
Hard to narrow it down to a couple of things. Yeah, it's hard to narrow it down. Like my brain right now, because we've talked about books so much, is like, if I could ban book bans, that would be lovely.
I mean, let's roll with that.
Like, that would be lovely. And if we could just have people care about one another more.
Yes.
Have people see it from another's perspective to be able to find moments of connection, to like have that space for it.
And those things are connected because stories help us to empathize with other people.
Yep. And
so, yes.
Yeah.
Getting all the books, more stories.
All the books, all the stories, letting stories be heard too. You know, if we had that queenly power of just letting stories be heard, letting people's voices be heard who haven't been heard for so long, letting people breathe, let people have a moment to speak.
Yeah.
Would just be, would help make things better. I think we each try to find them in our own communities and our own spaces. And the more people you meet and the variety of people you meet makes you care more about more parts of the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Carmen, my friend, I love you.
I love you.
I'm so happy that you are on the show.
I'm so happy I'm here and so happy that you are in my life. I'm eternally grateful for meeting you and having the friendship that we do so many years later, surviving so many things together. We've gone through
so many things.
And finding, you know,
but for real, that we have found joy.
Finding joy.
And maintained our friendship and transcended.
And transcended.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Really, you've brought so much to my life, and I'm so grateful for you.
I'm grateful for you, too.
Love you.
I hope this episode left you feeling seen, supported, and maybe a little inspired to try something new just because it brings you joy. And huge thanks to Carmen for her vulnerability, humor, and truth. And from reminding us all that grace, rest, and a little bit of rebellion are part of the work. If you liked this episode, don't forget to subscribe and rate and leave a review. You can also sign up for my new newsletter, The Joyful Rebellion, at thedawnlab.kit.com. Until next time, put yourself first.